Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast, today is July 2 or 3? 2.
2.
Yeah, July 2. 2. According to Nadia, the year's over.
End of the year, Christmas, start your shopping. I mean, get your resolutions together.
Somebody posted yesterday that we only have 150 days till Black Friday. I'm not the only person who thinks like this.
I know people was posting yesterday, 6 months to 2022. I'm like, relax, niggas.
Everybody settle down.
Trying to fly through. Listen, everybody trying to fly through the fucking. Relax.
I'm not trying to fly through.
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about you.
I'm just trying not to look up and be like, oh shit, it's November, which is exactly what happens.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about you specifically, of course, but I'm just saying, like, everybody's like, yo, you're only 6 months. I'm like, just enjoy the day. Enjoy the day. Just enjoy today. God damn.
We trying. There's too much shit going on, Jeff.
I know it's a lot of shit going on. We're going to jump right into it. I just want to say, I'm in Kentucky visiting my family. Saw my Uncle Paul yesterday. He's 86 now? 87? 86? Was telling me some family stories. I didn't know this. This is the thing that I didn't know, period. This is not based on my family, just in general. Maybe y'all did, but I didn't. But apparently, like, back in the 40s and whatnot, when the men, because there was really not many women, when men, maybe you knew this, Inca, when men would go to war, you could go to war, like, basically, like at like 16, like while you was in high school.
I knew that.
But some of them would come back from the war and go back to high school.
I didn't know that. I knew people would come back from the war and then go to college because, like, my grandfather was much older than, kind of older than my grandmother because
that was the times back then.
But it was also because he had gone to war and then come back and go on to state at the same time she was at state. Like, they were in school together at the same time. He was just older because he was coming back from the war. Yeah, I didn't know about the going back to high school part.
I thought, why would you want to?
But that's a whole different.
I thought you might know Inca because you're military. But
military in 2000?
I know,
Josh,
but I don't know if you knew the history of it. I don't know shit.
Look at World War II.
That might have been special dispensation, for lack of a better word, with enrolling in 16 because of World War II. Like, if we're in active wartime.
Yeah.
You know.
One of my uncles did that. I didn't know. He was like, I guess it was my Uncle John, I believe. Yeah, my Uncle John did it. He said, yeah, he came back and went. I was like, that's got to be weird because now you done been to war. You done did all kind of war stuff. And now you back trying to learn trigonometry. Like, what the fuck am I doing here?
I just killed a nigga. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to Miss Jones's English. I'm not trying to come up in here
and be in the fucking 4-H club when I just got down. Yeah.
It was a trip. Yeah. So, you know, of course, I was, you know, happy to see him and hear some family stories. And I'll be here till Monday. So I'll be seeing everybody.
Okay. What are you doing? I mean, we've been having.
I went to the Chipotle yesterday.
What have you been doing about food?
I went to the Chipotle yesterday. And, you know, it's easy to be vegan there. You just get, you know, they have a tofu meat thing there. That actually tastes pretty good. So I was cool yesterday. I don't know what I'm going to do today. Because I'm not going to eat Chipotle every day. You know what I'm saying? That's ridiculous. Right. So I don't really know what I'm going to do today. I'm scared.
It looks like Ty has a kitchen. You're in an extended stay? Or you're at somebody's house?
No, I'm at my cousin Ralph's house.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
My cousin Ralph's house, yeah. Everybody had to work today. Shit, so I'm here by myself.
Damn. Groceries and nothing? Like,
yeah, no.
Stuff up in the crib?
Okay. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Somebody cooking out? This is what I do. What you going
to
do?
We're supposed to cook out Saturday. And my cousin Kim, when she was all gung-ho. And then yesterday she realized, oh, it's going to be a whole lot of people over my house. And she canceled it.
She said all y'all niggas ain't coming.
I don't want y'all. I don't want these kids up in my house. I said, Kim. So I don't know what we're going to do. So we might just go out to some park somewhere, the field. We're just go out to the country.
Yo, that's so funny.
Because we have there's an area in the country where a lot of our older relatives are all buried out in the country with the horses. We might do that Sunday. So I'm just taking it as, you know, as it comes, man. You know,
I just got one more question. Speaking of food. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, babe. No, go.
Food, I was asked.
Oh, now you're breaking up.
You're breaking up, Inca.
Damn.
Drive. You can move over to another area. You got another parking space.
For those who are in the listening audience, we got two of the four of us are in cars right now. So
I'm down south.
I'm in my driveway.
Oh, you. Yeah.
He's like, my shit clear.
It'd be too much goddamn noise in my house, man.
Yeah.
All right, Eagle, try again because I can see you more.
Oh, no, she froze up again. Oh, wait, Inka, you might be good now. Allergies. Just stay in that position and talk.
How about now, Inka?
Yeah, we can hear you.
A little better, yeah.
All right, my bad. I was just going to say I was at Starbucks. These niggas are out of regular coffee.
That's crazy.
How you run out of regular coffee?
I told you I went to the Chipotle. They didn't have no chips. Inka keep breaking up, Inka. Drive near a Verizon store or something where they got the Wi-Fi.
You're gonna have those issues with people running out of stuff because, I mean, you haven't. Well, first of all, outside has opened again, so right. a manager over the last 18 months now has to reprocess how they're ordering.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Remember, a lot of this stuff is perishable. You don't have a lot of storeroom and stock room. Coffee particularly can go stale, right? Like if it's just sitting on the shelf. So it's not like you can just house it. I know vacuum sealed and all of that sort of shit. But still,
you can't just leave it sitting forever.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think we're going to run into that during the summer because there's so many new hurdles with sort of this double dutch of us trying to figure out how outside is going to work again. And then you'll start to see that shift. Also, too, remember, a lot of people are new in their positions, right? Like a lot of people didn't come back to work.
True.
A lot of people have moved on to new jobs. So you have a lot of people that were assistants or people that were sort of, you know, one or two rungs underneath a manager that is probably now an acting manager position.
Trying to figure shit out.
Different duties. So we're going to run into that.
Yeah. So outside is. It's interesting though. In the airport yesterday, you know, because I had to connect through Atlanta, so I was actually in three airports yesterday: LaGuardia, Hartsfield, and then you know I've touched down here. Well, Bluegrass, Kentucky is a very small airport, so it don't really matter. But in LaGuardia and Hartsfield, a lot of the food spots are still closed. The food court stuff they shut. They're like, I don't know if they're coming back. They will
come back. You know, look, man, everyone took a hit. You know, people were traveling. It's not like, you know, niggas were definitely not in the mood to buy $30 sandwiches. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, not popping. Like, niggas was not in the newsstand just dropping $40 on two magazines and some Altoids. So,
and a muffin.
So that's going to change, and they're probably going to be some restructuring. I think that those are like, some of those are like, you know, businesses, like they're separate entities from the airport.
Yeah. So we're going to jump in, man, because we got so much to talk about. We're probably going to miss a few topics unless we did a 4-hour show. Let's start right off with, we got double verses to talk about. Because we had Soulja Boy and Bow Wow last week, which I think I'm the only one on here panel that watched.
I believe so.
And we had Keith Sweat and Bobby Brown last night. So I'll do Soulja Boy and Bow Wow real quick. Again, you know, since I'm the only one to watch. So they had a chaotic versus as we was expected. Soulja Boy was being Soulja Boy and Bow Wow was being Bow Wow. It was it got it wasn't like they were never going to like fight or nothing, but it got a little chippy, at a couple points. And Soulja Boy was definitely being an antagonizer. And Soulja Boy pulled off for the 106 and Park crowd a big antagonizing move, which was he brought out Little Romeo. And Bow Wow, you can see Bow Wow did not know
That's
Romeo.
That's interesting.
You can see Bow Wow did not know Romeo was going to be there. He didn't. He was just like, what? Like, oh shit! Like again, and nobody's going to fight on stage or anything like that. But they've always had a
that was
a
definitely rivalry. Shady.
It was definitely mad shady.
Mad shady.
And like I said, and you can see Bow Wow was like really thrown by that. Romeo came out. But Romeo gave flowers to both of them. He's like, yo, like y'all were great. Y'all are great. You know, I love both y'all. And he gave Bow Wow a pound. He's like, they always try to pit us against each other. But you know, I want to let you know what you meant to me, and so on, so on. So it ended on a good note. But
you
it was
know what? good for Romeo for being the adult in the room. Like, and I think that this is a whole different topic that I would love to talk about one day. But like, some of these rich niggas' kids have grown up to be completely level-headed young adults, and Romeo is one of them. I think because he came up under his dad's money, whereas Bow and Soulja were doing their own, you know.
They were making the money.
And I think it's a different, you know, level of chill. But good for Romeo, because Soulja definitely did that to be petty and start some shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because Soulja Boy is a very petty
like,
man.
Fucking rich regardless. Both of y'all. I'm just going to tap both y'all up. Like,
yeah.
I do this as a pastime. Congratulations.
Yeah, exactly. But it was chaotic and you know, but it was definitely like a 106 and Park, you know, kind of reunion for the people who watched of that generation who watched that show. And you could see like from the tweets and the comments and stuff like that, that they were like just in heaven because they were seeing their kind of child. I honestly, I don't know why, and maybe this wasn't logistic or whatever, but I thought it would have been dope. I think you said this now. If Triller would have brought AJ and Free out, that would have been, they should have.
Yeah.
Like they should have. I don't know why they didn't do that, but that would have been incredible. But, you know, they
at
did.
At least
good.
Free. AJ is there, you know, AJ. Just a little problematic.
Yeah, he's a little problematic. But Freeze around. She's on Instagram.
And people love Free.
Yeah.
I have a question. Uh-huh. Did Soulja look as much like Flavor Flav in person as he did on his little videos he was doing with Val?
No.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
I didn't think so. Well, let me preface by saying. And bruh, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, bruh hates that nigga.
I don't hate him. I think that I just like I don't hate him. I'll just say that. I don't. I really don't hate him. But I don't like him. I'm not gonna like if I see a nigga getting jumped, I'm not just going like watch it, right? Like, you know what I'm saying?
But you might take a few extra seconds before you bring it up.
Yes. Get tossed out, I might not be so eager to tell security. Yeah, that's all I'm saying, right? Like, nah. I don't hate him. He just gives off embellishment energy.
Very.
All the time.
Yeah.
And while he has been first in many of things, he has been, you know, sort of ahead of the curve on a lot of things. I would never take that from him. You know, he's over the top. Like, he's over the top, man. He's fucking annoying. He's the annoying nigga who butts into every conversation to tell you how what you're talking
did.
About. Because you didn't do nothing, nigga. I was I smoked the hog first, nigga. I was the first nigga to wigs like that. I was the first nigga to mix my Jameson with ginger ale. What?
Yeah. He was saying that too on the thing. You know, I was the first rapper to do this. He's definitely annoying. He's definitely annoying.
He gives me Percy Miller Jr. vibes a lot.
Yeah. So, you know,
Lord.
Yeah, but it was entertaining for what it was. It was chaotic but entertaining. But let's move on to Bobby and Keith Sweat, who happened yesterday.
I'll take this one.
Okay, let me just say, I watched I watched it this morning, actually. So I watched probably 2/3 of it. So it's probably parts that I didn't, also parts I didn't see. But from what I saw, let me just say this, from what I saw, I thought Keith kind of bust Bobby up. I think Keith had more records than people thought he did.
Yes, he did.
But it was song selection.
It was a song selection. So here's the problem, right? This was an idea that either Bobby or Keith threw out on the radio on Sunday. And
because they scrambled to put it together that quickly?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. This was announced on Tuesday, literally. And they negotiated and got the deal together on Monday. They announced it on Tuesday as a surprise. And I get that Essence wanted to grab it for its last weekend of programming. Because, you know, Essence
would be now
doing, they did programming last weekend. There's programming this weekend. And even though it's virtual, they're doing small in person, you know, small groups of people in person. They're in LA. So they've made it like NOXLA, like NOLA.
Oh, okay.
But obviously this for them is very important to look like the setup for the comeback next year. So I totally get them hustling to put this together because it was Versus and Essence together presenting this last night. Like if you notice, Cassidy had the Essence Fest branding.
I saw the Essence Fest stuff around them.
You know, all that good stuff. So, but I felt two things. A, I felt like
let me just cut you, not to cut you. Let me just ask you one quick question about this. I'm curious. Yeah. Were there two people before them that maybe bailed out, or did they not?
No,
have,
it's like no. It was an really idea that Keith. There was no Versus planned for this weekend.
Okay.
It was an idea. I think that either Keith said he wanted a Versus with Bobby, or Bobby said he wanted a Versus
with. And they just ran with it
over the weekend, and they ran with it, right? Because at first, when I saw the announcement, I was Googling looking for it because Versus hadn't even. When I saw somebody tweet it, Versus had not actually commented on it yet, and I hit up the EIC at Essence like, is this really happening? And she was like, no, yeah, it's for real. And I was like, oh shit! And then Versus was like, surprise, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, And that was like Tuesday afternoon, evening even. Like it was not Tuesday morning.
Wow.
So and when I was first looking for the info, I saw the radio interview comment and I was like, see, y'all playing, because he just said it and da da da. But then it was really a thing. So anyway, I say that to say that I feel like a Versus of this stature, artists of this stature deserve the time for it to build. We ain't had like a 2-day announcement and drop since the early days of Versus when niggas was just hopping on the computer and playing music, right?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like because a lot of people did not have time to even realize it was happening or that it was real. And, you know, it was on a Thursday. So they had 400,000 people, but I'm imagining what it could have been
had it like on Sunday or something.
Right. And it was, to Ink's point, there was poor song management on both sides. Now, I knew Bobby was not going to wash Keith Sweat. I knew that because people, and somebody asked last night, is Keith Sweat black famous? And I was like, yes, he's black famous, which is why even people who should have known better were acting like Bobby was going to mop the fucking floor with him. Like, Keith don't have 7 number ones. Just because they R&B number ones don't mean the nigga ain't got hits, right? Like, even we are guilty of marginalizing what we think is big.
Mm-hmm.
Keith's catalog is so much broader than Bobby. Oh, yeah. Plus, he's a writer. And he was in the cups a little bit last night. And he got a little sassy towards the end because he was like, my pen game is crazy. Because, you know, which I had no idea Keith wrote Let's Chill.
Me either. But then when I listened to it, I was like, oh, yeah.
Makes sense.
I hear it. Especially the
pre-chorus that All My Love Is For You, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That's Keith all day.
Mm-hmm. So it does make sense. So it's like, all right. And then, of course, he brought out a silk joint, you know, that type of thing. I was like, all right. So, you know, Keith was being Keith. Bobby was trying to get his little energy in. You know, he was getting some dance steps in where he could. He had a great attitude. And what I loved about Bobby was every time I was about to make a joke about Bobby, Bobby made the joke first. Like, something about him sweating. And I was about to say Bobby sweating because of that coat. He was like, because his coat hot. Like, I couldn't even type it. You know what I'm saying? Bobby didn't know if I could get to it. So, they both seemed in good spirits. They both seem to enjoy being there. But again, Bobby's song management was trash.
Yeah.
Cassidy brought great energy. I just wish they'd had time to
do it right.
Strategize, do it right. Keep the energy level up through the whole thing, because both of them are playing like, you could tell it was like, this is my favorite joint. But it's we don't care about this song.
That's not necessarily the joint you should be playing. It's just your favorite record.
Like,
you
know, Bobby played Girl Next Door, and I was like, I forgot this record even existed. Like, why are we
I forgot about that, too. I was like, I forgot about this song.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, and the back to Bow Wow when Soulja Boy, they had those commercials that they, you know, the kind of, the Versus kind of does. And I think for somebody of Keith and Bobby's stature, I would have liked to seen, like you said, that type of marketing build. Yeah. We can kind of see, like, Keith, you know, riding through the Harlem trailers, playing some shit. Bobby up in Boston doing some shit. You know, they can kind of get the trailers and stuff. So, you know, but it was, and I do think, again, I don't know the logistics and anything like that, but it makes marketing sense to me for them to have done it on Sunday, because that's the last night of Essence, traditionally, where the big show happens.
But they probably already have whatever virtual performance lined up.
So I don't know. Yeah. So
this might have been the only night they could squeeze it into that.
Maybe. Yeah, the only night that made sense for both parties or whatever.
Yeah.
But because I saw 2/3 of it, I enjoyed it. Like I said, they were, you know, Keith was doing that Harlem shit, like giving you props while like shaming, like, digging you at the same time.
Okay. That little song is cute. Okay, yeah, exactly. That's cute.
Oh, you're doing your little... He's Omar Ballon, Bobby Brown, a new edition.
And then Bobby Brown did The Beautiful with Damian Marley, and Keith was actually joking. He was like, what's them lyrics? Like, he was like really clowning. And I was like,
shady-ass Harlem shady project nigga. You know what I'm saying?
Also, Hot 97, whoever was on your socials last night, like, y'all need to be ashamed, because they were putting up polls for each category. They called Freak Me, Let Me Lick You Up and Down.
Oh my God.
They called Right in the Wrong Way, You May Be Young But You're Ready. And Keith played this song that that LSG did that had LL Cool J and some other people on it. I was mad because he didn't do the one he did with LL, which was Why Me, but they said it was Why Me, and I was like, that's not what it was. So I'm just like, if you're gonna have somebody do something for, you know, catalogs that are 30 years old, make sure it's somebody who's going to recognize the catalog.
Who knows the titles, exactly. Not radio station.
How you quoting wrong shit and leaving the tweets up at that?
The proper titles, not the nigga titles. Not the cookout
titles. You're actually a radio station. You can't put up the nigga titles.
You can't put up the auntie titles. Play that You're Young and You Ain't Ready. You got to put the proper shit up. We might as well keep mentioning the BET Awards, which were last Sunday. As well, virtual. Well, not virtual. But a smaller audience than usual. They didn't.
But bigger than we have seen.
Before we go into BET, I just want to. So Pleasure P and Tank came out at the end.
Oh, I forgot about that on purpose.
Oh, the LSG.
This has been weighing on my spirit.
Okay.
And he said, you know, stop hating, give these guys their flowers, and made this entire speech as though Keith and Bobby have not had 35-year careers.
Yeah, there's been no hate.
Nigga, on either one of them.
My nigga, they are absolutely celebrated, okay? Like, don't ever get it twisted. They have not missed meals in 35 years, okay?
I saw niggas in 19 in concert on stage.
They might have had some rough in between years.
Yeah, up and downs, you know, shit happens.
But they have been celebrated, they have been embraced, and this newfound thing that I see a lot of entertainers doing, which is give them their flowers and give them their flowers. And like, yes, there are some people who have been kind of forgotten in sort of mainstream, and I don't want to make it seem like that's not the case, okay? But Bobby Brown and Keith Sweat, my nigga,
yeah,
like,
they are not forgotten.
They are good money, my guy.
Yeah. Bobby had a whole fucking documentary. Pleasure P just wanted to talk on the microphone. That's what that was. That nigga was like, I'm gonna get on a Versus.
I took it him trying to police the comments though.
Oh, yeah, but
he was trying to police the comments.
Yeah, but I see what you mean, because he said he saw the comments, but I'm also like, this is also a thing that I feel like entertainers do, is that they they don't do jokes well. Like, they don't, they're not able to read between the lines of what is a joke. Like, yes, dude, people were clowning Keith and people were clowning Bobby. That was all in love, and that is all the process of the verses. That's
exactly
what, right. Like, we were calling Keith uncle. They're very oversensitive, very taking things out of context. Like, if Keith took shit out of context as a 60-year-old Harlem nigga, like, yeah. I could understand that. Like, I could get that maybe he doesn't understand what's happening, or, you know, because it's not his, you know, he's not on social media like that. But,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Dude, if you've ever watched the verses, that happens. That's not
that's
to everybody
not brand or uncommon.
And just like somebody was saying, so I was talking about how people were sleeping on Keith, which I was really offended because I was like, the fuck is wrong with y'all? But somebody was like, oh, I think it's because, you know, haters used to call him a beggar back in the days. So I was like, that wasn't hate. That was love. Because that was when, because begging is what's missing from R&B. Like, we call
it. Keith actually said it in the verses. He's like, I know you always say I was begging all the time.
He said he was begging because that's what made him music good. Keith had hits. That begging is what made him hits. Shit. Yeah. That was not exist. And that's part of what I think it is that as younger generations are just, as younger listeners, I don't want to say generations because these people are like 10 years younger than me, but as younger listeners are rediscovering these artists, they don't have, to Sean's point, the cultural context to
context.
Put some of this commentary in. Like for example, Light at the BET Awards, as we're about to get into the BET Awards, I said the phrase give them their flowers is overdue, but I did say, I said, we don't talk about Light enough. I was like, because her flow is fucking crazy, and she's still like, she's never been a game, and it's still crazy when you give her the mic. And right after I tweeted that, she came out for UNITY, right? And somebody was like, do you think it's because, like, she did something with Sinead O'Connor when Sinead O'Connor was scandalous? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? No. I was of age. I don't even fucking, nobody cared about that.
Nobody remembered that shit. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you think some niggas in St. Louis cared about some shit? Sinead O'Connor, nigga.
What are you talking about?
I was like, Light just stayed low. She didn't do it. She wasn't outside a lot. She just kept to herself. I was like, but no, it had absolutely nothing to do with Sinead O'Connor. I was like, y'all niggas just be making up shit.
Making up dumb shit.
Yeah, like, no, that was not. So I think that's part of what it is. We don't have the context to put things in terms of the time and the day. But yeah, Keith, like you said, Keith ain't missed not a meal. I've seen Keith steadily over the years. That nigga is never not on the road.
Plus, them publishing checks are strong.
The last thing I want to say is that, you know, to your point, Nah, the way people were talking about or insinuating that Bobby was going to wash him was because we Don't Be Cruel was a monster.
Right?
And so what happens is that at that point, I think maybe shy of like Michael Jackson and Madonna, like Bobby might have been the most popular person in pop music during that time. You know, maybe Prince is ahead of him at that time.
Maybe. Yeah, it was tight. So, it was tight. It was
very tight. But that star was a big burst.
And it
dwindled very quickly.
Like,
after the Bobby album, which was the follow up and the one with Good Enough and Something in Common and stuff on it, that was a big album too, but it was a big R&B album. It was not Don't Be Cruel.
Then crossed over. Yeah, and crossed over.
It was a very big R&B. I think maybe Humping Around crossed over a little bit, but like it was a big R&B album. But that was the last we saw of Bobby for real.
Because
people have said that was part of the problem with him and Whitney's marriage. Like, Whitney Starr was ascending. She was doing Mike Starr shit.
And Bobby couldn't get it back. Yeah.
It was on a decline.
And when they met,
it was the opposite, you know?
Yeah, and Bobby was only, you know, he was in his early, mid-20s. Like, and he's already struggling with this after having, you know, the monster album, like you said, Don't Be Cruel was. But anyway, so BET Awards. I actually enjoyed the show. I thought it was a pretty good show.
A lot.
I mean, Jesse Collins, he's got it down to a science now, man. Like, where he does these shows, you know, Oscars. Did he do Oscars? But Grammys, definitely, and others. Yeah. Like, he just got it down to a science now. He knows how the show should move. He knows how to pace them properly. He knows where to put the act so there's no real lulls in the music and stuff. And again, I thought it was really well done. I really enjoyed the Latifah tribute. I really enjoyed Kirk Franklin and Lil Baby. It was a surprise. I didn't know they were going to do something.
I did not enjoy Kirk Franklin and Lil Baby because I did not know what the fuck Lil Baby was saying.
You have to listen to him to kind of get his cadence and flow.
My only complaints of the night, any complaints I had at night, as per usual, the sound mix is always just a little bit off on BET. I love the Mally, but there's like, for example, with DaBaby, his backing track for like the hook was super loud. It was louder than his actual vocals for the verse. But anyway, all my complaints were about the artists themselves, not the production. Like, I just really am disappointed that we still got niggas half rapping over the actual single track, not even a performance track.
Now you talking about Khaled?
I almost called it a debt. That's how old I am. Over the performance track. Yeah, like
Khaled. Performance, I didn't like it all.
Why are we still doing this? This is the biggest black television award show that you get. And also, congrats to the BET team. Their numbers are up. They had, they brought in like record advertising revenue, I think, in terms of the advertisers that came on board.
Good.
You know, they rolled out a rebrand, all kinds of shit. So BET was the first to the table. Shout out to Jesse with like a full virtual award show and stuff. So they're trying to keep that momentum going. But like, I was very proud of the show. I thought it was a well balanced show. I thought the Dana tribute was
outstanding.
They got the right people. No shots to anybody new, but honestly, Rhapsody was the only new person who needed to be in that shit.
Yeah.
The X tribute, same thing. Perfect lineup.
Yeah.
Perfect lineup of people. I thought it was really well balanced, and I enjoyed it.
And it felt like to borrow the phrase of the moment, even though it wasn't her show, from clips I saw on the red carpet and her performance in the show, I felt like Lil' Kim was getting her flowers, for lack of a better term. Like I love the clip of her and Lotto meeting, and Lotto just being like, holy shit, I fucking praise you and da-da-da-da. And just Kim just felt like she was moving through it. Even in her performance in the Dana tribute too, was like, it was just, it felt like people were like,
Kim reminding us that who she, Kim reminding us who she is. That's what
and
I
people
really
accepted love. It and not, people not tripping so much on how she looks and this and that. It was just like, oh, there's little Kim and I love her.
Every time Kim shows up, that's how I feel. Like, that's the thing that I was saying when I was talking about Light, it goes for Kim too. When these veterans hit the stage, like Cardi has that. When Cardi came out, Cardi came out.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like Cardi gave you blah 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 blah. Blah. Like she ate the Migos.
She did.
With belly and all. And like that's that energy that I see from the veterans, and I do not see that from all the new artists. Like you, I need that. I need that rock.
Well, you
like,
know what's happened? Bad. What's happened with the new artists, especially with the women? This is something that I actually don't like for the most part, is they've made these newer women artists like a Meg, Cardi in some cases. I'm tempted to maybe somebody else who's performed on a big stage, a newer artist, female artist. I can't think of the top of my head, but they put so much around them. There's so many dancers and so much production. And I understand you want to do a show. Nikki, that's the other one. You're right. And this, again, you want to give a show. I got that. But the veterans didn't have those options back then. So it was Latifah and her hype man. It was Light and her hype man. And so they had to give it up because it's only us and a DJ in the back.
The same thing with the dudes. The Migos got shit blowing up and it's smoke machines and it's rocks and terrain and shit like that. But like, I can barely hear your vocals, my nigga. Yeah.
And that comes from the dudes, that comes from Kanye. Kanye kind of put that super production up.
You just talking through your shit. And not deliver, like, you don't even have the breath control to deliver your shit full out, right?
What these niggas need is the same way NBA players, when they need to work on their game, they go see Hakeem. Okay, some of you niggas need to call Buster and have him to the hurt. Rent out
talk.
Call Tribe, get Ali and Tip in there and have them niggas help you guys work out, because their performances, like performances for me, it's just like I've had the pleasure of being on the road with Tribe, with Busta, with Missy. Like, you got to bring ass to get ass. Like, you got to bring shit regularly, my nigga. Like, that shit is just not gonna fly. Like, it looks to me like these guys don't really rehearse.
They don't. And they don't really. And they're hiding behind the production.
They're hiding behind the production and the hype, right? Like, the energy.
These don't even come to states of camera blocking and shit.
Yeah, like, nigga, are you guys still doing sound check? Or do you have a consistent sound man? Is there one guy that travels with you to make sure your front of the house is right? Because back in the days,
Rebecca.
That was Rebecca, right? Mm-hmm. Like, your shit was very consistent. After a certain point, maybe you didn't need to come to sound check or have your markers because you've done this, you know, you're on tour, right? But you know you gotta be at that shit. You have to make sure your shit is together.
Yeah, you're right. Like, you see the difference when the veterans, you just see how they move and how they work the camera and work the crowd. You just see it as opposed to the younger guys who are and ladies and who are just kind of there or just and the women. And the woman, I think it's even rougher because they're worrying about hitting their dance marks. They're like, oh, I got to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
all
blah,
blah. Of it.
And so it takes away from you being able to actually almost like enjoy the performance because you got too much going on in your head, you know?
And lastly, and last thing I will say about that is that I understand that now how artists make money and the kinds of money that they make impacts that, you know, being on the road may not be as important. Like, a lot of these guys can take a hit for not being on the road because they may be getting, you know, 200 grand endorsements and all that. You know, these, I hate to sound like get off my lawn guy, but yes, back in my day, this was literally how these niggas put food on their table. So they had to really bring it consistently.
And it's why these old heads can keep doing shows off of one single fucking 35 years later. Because when they perform, they fucking
kill it.
Perform.
You watch Big Daddy Kane, he's James Brown, man. Like, he's really giving it up. He's jumping over niggas that's 55 years old doing splits and killing
it. That's why I was so happy with the Law tribute and the X tribute. Because they wasn't trying to do, like, that year they brought... Who the fuck was it? Was it 21 Savage who didn't know the lyrics to fucking whatever the fuck that shit? Like, that's fine. Bring the motherfuckers who know and who know the energy to give and who will connect and I do think the combination of like the verses and the DJ lives and other artists getting on lives last year, I think that, you know, and you're art and A&R, so you better be able to say this, Jeff, but I noticed that, like, aside from catalog, like, jumping last year, samples are back. You know, it's like that connection is coming back around. And I think people are finally starting to realize, like, oh, there's something for me to learn here. They're not sunning me or trying to impart some shit to me. There's actually something for me.
Yeah, that's giving me some knowledge and some wisdom. Yeah. Inka, you back with us?
I hope so. Can y'all hear me?
We can hear you.
It's still raggedy. It's still messy.
The connection.
I'm sorry, baby.
You got a little robot. You got a little robot energy happening right now.
Yeah, you got the robot.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm gonna speak for you, Inka, because you can't come through. I was gonna give Inka 30 seconds to talk about Method Man, because
I can take that. I can take that with
you. Okay, fine. You got 30 seconds.
Beautiful.
You got 30 seconds. Go.
Clifford Smith has been fine since fucking Protect Your Neck dropped in goddamn 1992? Whenever the fuck that was. Even when he was
trying
even when
two.
He was trying single. To be ugly with the grill and the contacts
and the eye,
that nigga was still fine. But the fact that he is over 50 and he is getting more fine is not fair. He had a bad period. There wasn't a point where we was like, ooh, Meth looking rough. He need to drop some weight. There wasn't like a moment where we were like, damn, there was no like setback to get the nigga just keeps getting better. And it's unfair. Second of all, shout out to his wife. Cause I would be three steps behind and two steps to the left that nigga everywhere he went. in public at all times. I know hoes try her life every day, and I also have heard on good authority that homegirl is not a game, nor would I be, because that man, goddamn. But also, I just do want to give a shout out to my niggas, and this includes both of y'all, my Gen X niggas, my 70s born niggas, like how we talk about how if you took care of a vintage appliance or a vintage car or vintage clothes, and they last so long, whereas new shit just ain't made.
The last ain't made. They don't make them like they used to.
That's how I feel about it. And I guess you 60s technically, but whenever you were 50s, whenever the fuck.
Yeah, 30s.
That's how I feel about.
I was born in the Depression.
That's how I feel about black men born in the 70s. Like, when they are healthy and they are thriving, there is nothing like them. But meth is it's just unfair.
For that, you can definitely see meth is, you know, he's never been out of shape. But I mean, I know he was an athlete as a kid, and he's definitely gotten heavy back into his health and fitness regimen. You can see the weight, the changes in his body, you know, he's taking care of himself.
Let's also note, and I think it shouldn't go unnoticed, that a big part of that transformation was meth was suffering from insomnia.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If you watch Men's Fitness has a YouTube channel, and they'll kind of discuss a lot of guys, Nick Cannon, all of those guys do a come to almost like a Cribs for gyms and work.
Okay.
So meth also had a spread. You know, I buy those magazines.
Yeah, Men's Fitness is a good. It's a really good magazine. Yeah. And Men's Health, both of them.
Yeah, and Men's Health. Yes. Mm-hmm. So he had been. You know, he was like, I'm up, and I really kind of was trying to figure out where can I exert this energy. So he really started on some like going to a 24-hour gym at like 4 in the morning type shit. And just kind of stuck with it. Which is like unimaginable for me, like 4 a.m. Like, but God.
But actually, for him, it's great because he's not gonna get bothered at 4 a.m.
I was gonna say, so it worked for him, and I think it kind of put him into that. And I also think as he really shifted more into the acting roles, he recognized, much like LL, like my body, how I look is a big.
It's his money. It's his money. It's
how I'm getting my bread, so I need to maintain my shit. So. You know, that's why you
shout out to him, because he has been doing that. God bless you.
God bless meth.
God bless your wife. God bless your children.
I want to jump into real quick, just to mention the series on Netflix called This Is Pop. I think it's 7 episodes. I think it's 7 episodes, and they talk about pop music, but they take it from different angles than are normally taken. So there's a Boyz II Men episode, and they talk about their kind of career arc. There's a there's an auto tune
which I took issue with.
Shout out to Irene, who got mad at me because I took Sean's the comment from Sean, which I agree with, which is that Boyz II Men has very much gotten all they goddamn flowers, the garden. Like arborariums, fucking botanical gardens, like these niggas sold 35 million fucking albums. They got.
I think why, and I don't know if they think that, but I don't. I think why people
apparently kinda, they. I haven't watched it yet, but apparently they don't seem to think
they don't. They're not tripping. But they sold 35 million albums, but they sold 35 million albums in like 5 years. It was like such a quick run. It was like the first
when they burned
album.
They burned out fast.
It was fast. It went like 15 million, like 7 million, 3 million.
And then like
boom, and
shipped,
then boom.
Then like shipped a million. Like then
exactly.
Shipped,
then it was,
and
then
I was,
it was
at Arista for that shipped a million.
Yeah, then it was then that. It was out the door. Yeah. And there's actually an auto-tune episode, but it stars T-Pain and the man who invented auto-tune, Dr. Jerry, I think his name is. And so there's a Swedish episode about, you know, Max Martin and Dennis Pop and the Swedish pop domination and so on and so on and so on. But it's very, very, very well done. Very interesting. I got one more to watch. I got to watch the country one to kind of end it. But it's just a very, and there's a festival one. So this is very well done. I highly suggest if, you know, watch it, because you learn some things in these in those episodes. I wanted to just mention that because I wanted to give us a little more time to talk about the My Life doc. Mary J. Blige.
Oh, I love it so much.
So that she, there's a My Life doc on Amazon Prime, produced by Puffy, Mary, and a couple other people, and talks about Mary's life, but surround the meat of it is surrounding the My Life album, which is Mary's second album.
And her seminal album.
And to me, her seminal album as well. And just very emotional doc. Like, it's a very emotional doc. Like, this you know, I wasn't expecting to be as moved as I was. You know, Mary telling her story about, you know, living in the projects and the rough time that she had growing up as a girl in the projects. And the things that, you know, her father leaving and how that affected her life. Her, you know, her discovery.
Yeah.
Jeff Red, to Andre, to meeting Puff and so on and so on. They bring back some of the people who worked on the album, Chucky Thompson, Big Bub.
Which Bub, by the way, I'm worried about Bub, but.
And just again, just a very emotional doc. You know, and then you know, it showed Mary in concert at Barclay.
It was in concert during the year.
Her and Nas, right? It was her and Nas.
It was emotional. Tour. Yeah, it was during the royalty tour, but that was also the 25th anniversary of My Life.
Okay.
So I think, you know, as I've done a couple pieces on Mary and had to do some research on Mary lately, and My Life is my favorite. It's almost everybody's favorite Mary album, right? And it's my favorite Mary album. Like, I have never, in the 26 years since My Life dropped, and I was playing it in my little Sentra, have I not played that album or some parts of that album semi-regularly. Because it's fucking, like, sonically it's perfect. Like, the shit Chucky and the
mixes. Yeah, and the mixes.
The music and the mixes are, like, and when you think about the fact that everybody who put that album together was under 25.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like when you think about that and the way it holds up, so whether you're listening to Mary's lyrics or whether, like you said, you're listening to the mix or whether you're listening to Bub and Faith and sometimes Casey and JoJo's background vocals, like whatever it is, like all parts of that album are fucking flawless. And like, I'm like, the main singles, like Happy and I'm Going Down and shit, those are my least favorite parts of the album. But the whole thing is, like, while she was making My Life, I think when it came out, we all assumed it was, like, a testimony. Like, I was in this place and I'm out. But she was actually, like, suicidal as she was making the album. And she's at a place in her... The message I feel like was coming away from that was, like, I need y'all to know where I was. I need y'all to know what this album came out of. But I need y'all to know that I made it.
Yeah, made it. So now I can come
back. You can tell even when she was listening to it. She said in an interview last year that she doesn't really listen back to her music. She just started listening to My Life again recently. And there's moments like they're playing My Life. It's her, it's Chucky, I think it's Tanya and some other people. And she's like, stop.
Yeah, turn that shit off. Turn it off.
Yeah, yeah, like she's like, I can't. And you could see her face when she's listening to it was like, God damn. Like, you know, she was like, turn it off. So, even though we know a lot of the narrative we were hearing already, because we know a lot of Mary's story, I don't think we'd ever heard it. Sorry, y'all, that's Washington Heights in the background. I don't think we'd ever heard it. It was almost like a track by track. It's like, you know, I was going through this with Casey. So, you know, you like this song. Even though you bob into the song, it starts with, ooh, baby, not tonight. I don't want to fuss and fight. You know, like that, like that. We hadn't gotten that kind of context before.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you think, bro?
I thought it was great. It really put in perspective to me how young Mary was, because
that too.
Mary has always had such an old soul, like, and you know, for me, I think My Life comes out in what,
94.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'm, you know, 17. You know what I'm saying? About to be 18, right? Like, so in my mind, Mary was like so much older.
Yeah. Than me.
You know what I'm saying?
She's
that far in age, but it was really a great documentary. There was a lot of the stuff that folks like us kind of knew, that she had been going through. We've kind of heard about this over the years. We knew that that wasn't, you know, Mary had always given a testimony about having these struggles, but it was never done in a succinct, coherent, linear way.
Right.
That was done, and I thought that it was really, really good. I also really enjoyed seeing people have such great memories of a period that meant so much to not just them, but to others, right? Like, so often the people who are creating those memories are lost in just doing their job, that they don't really necessarily appreciate it.
Yeah.
But you understand when Puff is like, yeah, I'm going through my breakup with Misa at the
time. Yeah, and we're sitting at the board crying to each other, you know?
Yeah, right. And so it was really, really great to see. It was also really, really great to see that people saw and believed in her in a way that I don't necessarily know happens outside of that period.
That's what I was going to say, too.
Yeah, I don't,
Dre was a big part of that, and I was really happy to see how much of Dre was in the doc.
In the doc, rather. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was again. Well, Inka, did you watch it?
I did. Please, God, tell me y'all can hear me.
No, but yes, you clean now. You good to go now.
Good money now.
Inka done found four walls and a roof. Jesus.
Exactly.
Inka somewhere. Inka done bought somebody.
I did watch it. What struck me about the doc more than anything was that I was seeing Andre Harrell. And just how much he is like the genuine version of what Puff is, or what we think Puff is. I know it's like a weird thing to say, but I felt like,
oh, I know what you mean.
Oh, this is Puff energy without the bullshit. That's what I felt from it.
Yeah.
But I never knew, like, you can see the trauma and the pain in Mary's face and in her eyes when she speaks. And my life was never, you know, on my playlist. Obviously, I think I was like 11 when that came out. Mm-hmm. But listening to the music now, it gave me a better appreciation for the kind of artist that she is. It was an incredible look into a documentary, and we need more of that. That's what I was looking for in the verses, too. It was just like, tell the fucking story of the songs.
Yeah, like why you wrote that shit? Like, what was happening?
And what I also loved about the doc was that she gave up just enough, but not giving up too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell she's still very guarded and still very protected. And I really liked that. Like, at first I was like, you know, this seems very guarded, but then I realized that I'm watching this through a prism of, you know what I'm saying, kind of having known some of this.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm judging this incorrectly. And when you look at it and just kind of take it for what it is, it's actually a really good doc that talks about a very particular period in her life and how she kind of got up to that point. Mm-hmm. It was really... I wouldn't say heartbreaking, but it was really striking to see her on the British show or the overseas. Of KC. And, you know, I'm clearly not trying to justify whatever fuck shit, you know, he was doing to her. But that was a very common thing for PR people to make their artists do and say. They were selling the chance to get with Jodeci, right?
Yeah, like they're single, ladies. They're single, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah. So it was really, really tough to kind of watch her sort of be ambushed to some degree.
Yeah.
With that, and you can really kind of see that striking pain in her face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's a reminder that this is a young woman. She's
They were kids, 21, 22 years old. You know,
Chucky was 24. I think Puff was 24 or 26.
Yeah, Puff and Chucky were like the older ones at 24.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Mary and Casey and them were like 21, 22.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were babies.
I stepped away. I don't know if you guys said this, so forgive me if I'm repeating. The one thing that really struck me watching this was, again, the journey that fans have taken with Mary, which she centers the fans. She centers her relationship with the fans a lot in this. But the journey that the fans have taken with Mary is one of going with her through her pain and her struggles and whatever. But her self-awareness and her insight, like the way she's able to point back to what was going on with her and talk about it, that's a person who's done a lot of reflection. That's a person who's done a lot of work and growing and addressing. Like it's very clear and it's very focused.
Yeah.
The way, you know, she's able to talk about where she was and
where she was at that point.
What was happening and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a couple of things that I also found interesting. One is how women just automatically testimony to her.
Yes.
And she's sitting there like, she's listening. She's definitely, but she's kind of, she's
like, what do you say?
She's just kind of uncomfortable to her because people are literally like, I was about to kill myself and you literally saved my life. And right. She's just like, wow, okay. You know, so, and they were just, it kept showing people, women just, you know, because she would do these God bless her for still doing fucking meet and greets.
Yeah.
At this age, this stage in her career, a lot of artists don't do that no more. Like the fact that she's still,
so draining when your material is that personal too.
Exactly.
Yeah, but then she's still doing it.
Then you gotta smile. And that's, I think, what makes it seem like it's awkward for her, because they're telling her this before they take the picture.
Like, take a picture.
It's kind of like, smile, boo, let's take this picture. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's kind of like, and also like it's 42 other motherfuckers in line waiting
and that are gonna do the same thing.
Yeah, because that, you're right. That is, it's hard for artists to, because there is like a level of management to it, right? So like your team is trying to like flow people through without rushing anybody, and you want to acknowledge everybody, but she can't get in that moment.
Yeah, you can't do an hour conversation with everybody.
Yeah, like
either.
I can't, like, thank you, I love you, okay, smile. Like you can tell it's like kind of hard for her to. Okay, that's okay.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah, so I was shocked.
Wow.
Wow, that shit crazy. You all right, though? You know what I'm saying? And then it was wild. It was wild. Again, God bless her for still doing meet and greets.
She just like, God bless
you. Artists of her magnitude don't do meet and greets much anymore, so God bless that. And then she gave some insight. I mean, I don't know if love is the right term, but I just found it very interesting, her talking about her upbringing and the projects and how, you know, when they moved there, how crazy and how rough it was. And she was like, yeah, like at a certain point, like you don't smile anymore because everybody thinks if you're smiling, then you have something. So you stop smiling. And he's showing these pictures of her when she was young and it was, her face is frozen. And even in the early Mary albums and stuff, she would never really smile.
Nope.
Because she's like, yo, I can't smile because I can't reveal to anybody that I'm actually happy.
Still don't smile that much.
She still don't smile.
Like,
yeah, it looks uncomfortable. Like, it looks uncomfortable when she smiles sometimes.
Yeah, when you see Mary kind of like laugh, it's actually kind of shocking. Like, oh, shit. Oh, she chuckled.
She also laughs like a person who, when she laughs, she holds her mouth.
She does the mouth cover. She does the mouth cover.
People, you can tell when somebody has not been comfortable laughing openly, she kind of does that thing when she laughs and kind of keeps her mouth from widening all the way up, which I noticed that. But also, like, to your point, the thing I was surprised about, I was actually surprised how much they talked about her and Casey. I didn't expect her to give him that much burn, but it was
But it was part of part of the process.
I interviewed Casey after I saw the doc. And Chucky was saying, which if you ever look at the credits, you'll notice it. Like, as much as her and Casey were going through it, Casey and JoJo actually helped with
song of, a lot of the album. Studio, like, there's some stuff. I actually was wondering if they were going to interview Casey.
Right.
But I guess, you know, it was her doc and maybe she wouldn't want to. But I kind of wondered.
Okay, that's a bridge too far.
Yeah, bridge too far, yeah.
Yeah, but one thing I did think was interesting that I had never considered about them was Dre mentioned, you know, Casey having, you know, been established before Jodeci, you know, his little Cedric and whatever, and how it must have been for Mary to know that she could match vocals with Casey. Like, how confirming that must have been, you know, for her, considering how well they could sing. I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, I just, again, the idea of everybody being so young, it's almost impossible for me to consider now. It's almost impossible for me to consider an album of that magnitude and that staying power being made by a bunch of people who are so young.
Yeah.
An R&B album, at least. And I shouldn't specify the difference, but the fact that we're talking about songwriting, we're talking about vocal arrangement, we're talking about...
Well, that's because because all those kids at that time, that they were kids...
Our shit.
The church. They're all church kids. All that's church. Bub, Casey, JoJo,
Chucky.
Chucky. They're all coming out of the church, so you're getting a different energy that you're going to get now, you know, because now it's going to be from a hip-hop angle as opposed
to... Well, that's why R&B is sampling R&B now, because they don't know...
Because they don't know how to do that stuff.
That sound. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think and it's just... I was going back and listening to it like closely instead of just playing it, and it's just, it's so good.
It's crazy. Sonically, no, I was crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
So good. It's crazy.
It was
the first grown up album somebody our peer group made. That's the way I always thought about it, right? So like we would listen to, I was only a few months older than Sean. I was coming to my sophomore year because I skipped grade in sophomore year of college. Spring semester, I just caught my first little whip. But like, even though we were listening to what would now be considered adult contemporary R&B, like we listened to Luther and we listened to Regina Bell and stuff like that. This was the first time that somebody who like looked like us and dressed like us was making an album about like some real.
Yeah. It was basically, like I said, it was basically Mary making Rapture.
Correct.
It was like, it was a Mary making Rapture, but it had obviously like the drums were different. It was more hip hop elements, but it was our version of like the Rapture album, which was like a monstrous.
And that moment album. Where she's singing with Anita.
Oh, that was crazy.
There's like four times when I cried in that doc. And when Anita says, "Don't you cry, don't you cry."
Yeah.
That's the first one when I just started. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
Because Mary talked about all earlier how like that. She listened to Anita Baker all the time. So she's like literally singing with her idol. Like how the fuck.
And the way they edited it in, because they edited it in right after she talked about singing the whole album to get her deal.
Yep. It's so the whole Rapture album.
Perfect moment, right? It was just like.
It was great doc. So if you haven't seen it, please watch it because it's awesome. we're going to jump into some deep water now. Deeper water, I should say. Well, let's do just a couple little quick hits before we jump too deep. Tyler the Creator dropped his album. Call Me When You Get Home is the title. It's a really good album. He did it like a Gangsta Grillz mixtape, so DJ Drama's all through the album doing the skits and stuff like that. It's very hip hop leaning. It's not kind of like the more weirdy Tyler stuff. Because Tyler is a hip hop kid, like people kind of seem to have kind of forgotten that because of all the other things he's done, but like at his core, like he's a hip-hop kid, you know. So listen to that if you haven't listened to it. Yeah, it's a really, really good project.
I'm so proud of Tyler. I'm just so happy to see Tyler perform on the BET Awards.
On the BET Awards, it was dope too. His performance is dope too.
For the first time, because back like during the I Future mixtape and when Tyler did the Wolf album, so that's like 2012, 13, we couldn't even get him on like a hot or, you know, a power or anything. Like our urban promo team, and I'm not dissing them at all, they didn't want to touch Tyler because they didn't understand.
They didn't understand what it was. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But Tyler, on the other hand, was kind of like, you know, well, if, you know, quote unquote, you know, mainstream hip hop don't want me, fuck them too. You know, so it was like, back and forth. So I'm happy as he's grown, you know, out of the foolish antics that used to scare people off, people can really see how talented
he is. Yeah.
I really loved his BET performance. I don't know if y'all talked about this, but it felt like the one that was rehearsed. That was
he probably did rehearse
it. Thought out and perfect. Yeah.
He definitely did. He's in the car and all that.
He's a fucking perfectionist. Believe he brought her all that. Yeah.
And obviously he knew the magnitude of, yo, this is my first BET Awards performance. I gotta kill this shit, you know?
Now, it was like a breath of fresh air after watching everybody like just be on the stage out of breath.
Walking around, doing nothing. Yeah. I saw a little quick tidbit just I want to mention that I blew my mind. I don't know if you guys saw it. So there's a show on Paramount Plus, which I don't have, called, I forget what it's called, but it's Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, who I've mentioned before on like my top five favorite rock group ever. He has a show where he talks to other artists and they're just kind of talking. So there's a clip on Twitter now where he's talking to Pharrell. And Pharrell's a drummer by trade. Like he played drums in high school and stuff. So they're talking about drumming and, you know, Pharrell's like, why ain't a drummer like you? And he's like, Dave's like, yo, bro, stop saying I'm a good drummer. And Pharrell's like, nigga, shut the fuck up. Like, you're like crazy with it. Like, you sound crazy, right? And he's like, nah. Dave says, nah, you know, I stole all my shit from the Gap Band, Cameo, and Tony Thompson. Tony Thompson's the person who played drums for Chic and went on to play drums for Power Station, David Bowie. Like, he's a phenomenal drummer. And if Pharrell's like, "Word," and he's like, "Yeah, listen to the beginning of Nirvana," and he of Teen Spirit, and then the blood, that big drum, you know, the big drums. What's it called? What's it called? You know, when it comes in, you know, with the blood, and he said, "Listen," and then they cut, and he played. They played "Burn Rubber" by Gap Band, and it's like blood. He's like, and Pharrell's like, "Oh shit. You stole the Gap Band." And he's like, "Yeah, man, all my fills are black music fills. Everything I did." He said he met Tony Thompson one time. And Tony Thompson, he's like, "Yo, Tony, thank you, man. I stole all your shit." And Tony was like, "Yeah, I know. I know you steal all my shit." So it was interesting to see this white rock guy being like, "Yeah, the best drummers is black, and I steal all their shit all the time." So, you know, but people don't really catch on to what I'm doing. So I might have to get Paramount Plus just to watch that show because it looks really interesting. Let's talk about William H. Cosby. So William H. Cosby.
Fuck him. That's all I really got to say.
William H. Cosby was let out of jail yesterday on a air quotes technicality. And I want to get into this technicality thing because it's really irking my soul.
So
go ahead.
I was going to say my understanding of it is that the prosecutor and his attorneys made a deal in the civil suit that if he testified, they wouldn't charge him criminally.
Yes.
And then the
DA. Ever.
So that's why he copped to like drugging the women. He started to admit stuff. So then the DA changed. Like it's a new DA. And that nigga charged him. But the Supreme Court or whatever court they appealed to upheld the original deal between DA-1 and Cosby.
Because that testimony was the crux of him getting found guilty and sentenced this time.
Yes. Okay, so I saw a woman on MSNBC, and you know, she could have been just talking shit. She was a lawyer. And she said that as of now, one of the issues that she has is nobody's been able to, and correct me if I'm wrong, nobody's been able to provide the paperwork saying that. So it's kind of like the DA said that to Cosby, but nobody papered it. So she's like, is it true? Is it not true? Because there's no hard evidence where he wrote that and they signed off on it saying that was the case. And then she said also, if that was the case, then how did this case get so far when they had that as a trump card, pardon the pun, to say, yo, bro, we did a deal with, you said the DA previous, call him or her, and she'll tell you that you can't prosecute us. So that's why I'm like, yeah, that what she's saying kind of makes just general sense. Like, why would they let this go all the way through to this man has been in jail for, at least 2 to 3 years, you know, and like nobody was like, hey, yo, we had a deal with so-and-so, just call them down at their retirement house in Florida and they'll clear it up. I don't, it's something. Some ain't sitting right in a crawl.
Agreement that they decided to uphold, you know.
But I'm saying, why wouldn't they call the previous DA to be like, yo, tell your people what we did?
Because Republicans don't give a fuck. This is why they packed the courtrooms for shit like this.
Yeah.
Y'all go ahead. What y'all think about this?
I mean, him being in jail, him not being in jail, none of that shit changes what he did.
Nope.
I've you know, fuck him, first of all. It's just interesting to see people go out of their way to defend a fucking serial rapist who basically...
Who admitted it.
who also went on a fucking speaking tour to tell you that you couldn't read, your mama wasn't shit, and sat here and talked about you like fucking dogs.
Yep.
But... I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. He has he's done this, right? Like he's admitted to doing this.
Guilty as fuck, he did that shit.
He did that shit. And yes, I would like to say, like, how did we even get to a trial? Like, why did we even get to a trial? If this was something that you had and something that you could prove, and what's crazy is this was never even mentioned in the press. So it's not even like it was something that they were kind of chanting from the hilltops and saying, right, be on trial. We shouldn't be on trial because he cut a deal. it's also kind of like weird as fuck to be like, yeah, he cut a deal so that he could admit to the shit that he did. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, people do that all the time. And the judicial system has a lot of these fucking loopholes and cut throughs and all sorts of weird shit that can happen. And also, this is Pennsylvania. OK, this is a fucking red state. Yeah. By and large. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
It's insane to me that you can that proceedings in a civil suit or civil court matter or whatever aren't just used in the criminal court. Like, if I pay you $2 million because I did a thing to you, why the fuck is that not an admission of me guilt. Doing a thing to you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, man. It's like I said, the lawyer on MSNBC she basically was like, these motherfuckers is lying. Like, she's like, I don't know what happened, but this whole shit is bullshit. It's a lie. I didn't see no paperwork for it. Nobody seen no paperwork. I don't know what they did, but this is a lie. You know, but he's out now and it's double jeopardy, so they can't charge him again.
No.
I thought they can't charge him again.
Is it double jeopardy only murder?
They overturned the conviction. It does not mean that he can't be tried. The likelihood of him being tried again, they can try him again. They just wouldn't be able to use, apparently they wouldn't be able to use this evidence used in the trial.
Okay.
Also, again, at 87, are they really going to try him? I mean, he's done 3 years in prison. To be quite honest, they might want to let this sleeping dog lie because he might have a fucking case for them. I mean, if he can prove it, like if there's some sort of verbal saying that hey, it never happened, then they might be looking at, you know, a wrongful conviction. Like I don't know. Again, this shit gets super murky.
Yeah.
Okay. He's fucking rapey, and this is what the fuck he does. And okay, and I don't think, and just to be clear, I don't think at 87 he still wouldn't give somebody a fucking quaalude, okay, and rape him.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Keep this nigga away from everybody.
Everybody. Every fucking body. Ain't no fucking sleepovers at the Cosby residence.
Word. And then Felicia Rashad jumped in saying, no, justice has been overturned, and, you know, social media jumped all over her neck.
And Howard clearly picked up the phone and called her because she was that shit quick. And then Howard was like, short. Like she was wilding.
Yeah. And Shorty's like, this, and he admitted that he did it. Like, stop saying he got, like, innocently convicted. That's not what happened.
A miscarriage of justice is what she said, which is like
crazy.
There's so many actual miscarriages of justice.
Yeah.
To use this as like a baseline for that statement is just so fucking tone deaf.
It's awful. And I really was trying to like ignore her support the first time. And then like she enthusiastically tweeted this shit out like within 2 hours of the goddamn announcement.
And shut off the comments. So she clearly knew she was doing.
She knew what was coming.
And Stephanie Mills, I think, retweeted it at some point, which that's a whole other thing. But like, and people were like, this is what I do want to say. Her support is fucked and it's short-sighted and it goes against what a lot of us thought Felicia Rashad was, but it's the same thing. Like, just like Bill ain't fucking Cliff Huxtable. She ain't
Claire.
You know, she ain't Claire, but her, everything about her to me had always suggested like she was just on a different level. Like, I don't think, sorry, there's a lot of sirens today. Like, I don't think that we would ever see Debbie say no shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So, even though Debbie worked, you know, with him on Different World or whatever, but still, but the reasons people are trying to give for her support, like, oh, it's because of the money, because of the syndication from Kylie Show. Y'all niggas really don't know how any fucking thing works. Yeah. And she's just supporting him because she chose to fucking support.
Exactly.
Like,
it is especially problematic, though, to be the head or the dean of the fine arts school when you're who women, young women, whoever come to when shit like this happens to them on college campus. You make the determination as to whether or not we're going to pursue this or what happens with the offender. So if these are your beliefs that you hold the shit is problematic and you probably should not have that kind of influence at a university.
Yes. Yeah. With 18, 19 year old girls who are going
to
shit.
No one asked your opinion. Like, no one didn't ask anything. Like, that's the other thing. Like, even if you felt like this was something that you felt internally, right? Like, you didn't have to post this.
At
the,
all.
The tweet has been since deleted. But it just really goes to show you that this is kind of how a lot of women her age feel.
Mm-hmm.
This is the line
old
of
thinking. Old fast-tail gals.
This is the thinking for a lot of women. I still... I know it's impossible, but I would still have loved to seen that entire fucking funneling system that was at William Morris, that was, you know, putting these young women with him, that were filtering and aiding and abetting and all of this shit. And I'm not surprised. Look, at a certain age, right, like, we know, and being in entertainment, like, we know that these people are different than their on-screen or on-stage performers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we don't tend to be very surprised by a lot of shit because we hear conversations in private that we can kind of take. They give you indications that this mm-hmm. is their line of thinking. She has been consistent.
Yep.
And so I don't, you know, am I still going to watch the Cosby Show reruns? I probably will.
Yeah.
I didn't stop before. Right. But like I've said before, everyone has their line, right? Like everyone has their line. There's some people that are going to be like, I'm not fucking with it. I'm not doing it. Understandable.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to mention, two quick things that we can kind of jump in deeper maybe the next show. One, the Trump indictment came down yesterday. So the Trump organization was indicted, and his CFO, Alan Weisselberg, was also indicted. They threw his ass in handcuffs and gave him a perp walk. I sent Sean a very interesting thread on Twitter about from this guy, Kirk Eichenwald, who writes a lot about politics, and kind of was breaking down why this is really bad for Trump. It's kind of too complicated to get into right now. We need more time, but and we will next week maybe, because more stuff will come out by then as well. But it's definitely bad. Like, and it was basically he's playing three card Monty, for lack of a better term. He's just moving shit around.
Yep.
But now he moved it around to the, now they found that way he's moving around, and then they're pulling things away from him, and he's fucked. I always thought one of the main reasons, besides his ego, that he wanted to stay president is because of...
avoid this shit.
Yes, because he had immunity. Number one. Number two, because he could do things with foreign governments to keep his money coming in. Because he's... I was going to say something, but I don't want to say that because I don't want to attribute that to blackness. But he was just doing dumb shit. He's basically like a kid. He gets a lot of money and he spends a lot of money. And then he tries to go get more money to spend more money to cover the bills that he just spent all that money on. So that's the game he plays. He gets these loans and he just burns through them, stunting and fronting. He doesn't like do anything with the money really, but just spend it. Buys a bunch of shit, and then he uses the stuff that he buys as collateral to try to get more money, and so on and so on and so on and so on. But now that game is up, and a lot of these loans, millions of dollars of loans, are coming back next year that he's got to pay back, and not being president doesn't give him the access to talk to Saudi Arabia or Russia or whatever, because now they're like, because before he could talk to them and be like, yo, I need some bread, I'll give you this, I'll give you that. Now they're like, you can't give us shit, bro. You ain't the president. Fuck out of here. Why would I loan you money? You can't do nothing for me.
That's why he was panicked, and that's why he's still panicked, because you know there's like this, the pillow dude is spearheading some conspiracy that somehow Trump is going to be
in August, next month.
Come on, that man. Apparently Trump is kind of going along with. I have no idea what the basis of it is. I haven't looked.
It's based on nothing.
But this is why that motherfucker was so panicked, and this is why they're still doing recounts, and this is why all the other shit, because he not only wants to avoid prison, but Trump doesn't have any money and he has no more leverage.
Nope.
So, like, all of that is, he has less leverage now than he had before he went into office. Like,
if you peep Simple Game, notice he don't really travel no more.
Nah.
Remember, when he was president, he was on a fucking bird every week, going to play golf here, going to play golf in Jersey.
He has no money.
He stays in Mar-a-Lago because his plane is grounded because he ain't got the bread. He ain't got the bread for the fuel. Like, his shit is collapsing. But we'll get into it. I'll let Brad do a deep dive next week since he's the Pop Life financial analyst. And also want to just mention the condo building collapse in Surfside in Miami, which is awful. 3:30 in the morning, half a building just collapses. It just falls down. And people are like, 3:30 in the morning, not that it's a good time, but 3:30 in the morning is probably like the worst time because everybody's home sleeping. So everybody's in bed. There's kids, everybody. And the building just collapses. They come find out there's been, reports of structural damage previous to this, and people trying to tell them to fix it, and the condo board was playing, trying to get people to do stuff, and the owners were messing around. Go ahead, bro.
I listened to a podcast, which is really great. New York Times Daily had a podcast.
I got that one in my queue. I got to listen to it about. Mm-hmm.
You should take a listen to it. And basically, there is a law that you're supposed to have your building sort of inspected like after 40 years. And they were coming up on that. So apparently the building structure was done in like 1981. So they were up on that new inspection. There were obviously renovations done to the building. There was some issues that they were having on like a pool deck, which is like right above the garage. And so the homeowners association tried to pass off these costs to the owners. And it was something like between $80,000 and $220,000 that they would have been assessed.
You mean each person. Right.
Each person, yes. So like, imagine, you're on a fixed income, right? Like you're own this place.
It's your retirement home.
You're not moving anything. You think, you have budgeted for slight increases. You definitely are not anticipating an unexpected $100,000 payment that you have to make.
Yep.
Even if it's over time.
Yep.
And so the people, they basically balked at that number, which, obviously makes, prolongs things. It was crazy because apparently they were like two people that were there, like kind of like walking around, and they, the building fell and they were like fucking climbing in flip-flops and shit, trying to like walk around the rubble to see people that they can help. Apparently they're doing a quiet zone as they search for signs of life, because they were saying that it's not just about noise. Like, you're also listening for people scratching, hitting on things. Like, there are just so many different ways that they can find signs of life. So they do a quiet period during the search. They, it's basically become a makeshift memorial.
Yeah.
So these are now coming there. And I will say this, they have done a great job at keeping that private.
Yes. And
allowing that to become, part of the story here.
Yes, so it's like they have a perimeter too. Like, you can't, the reporters can't just come freely come in and out.
Yes, and then so they're also, they're basically having them at like some sort of convention hall, a hotel hall or something nearby where the people are able to come in and sort of get information. And it was just sad, like listening to this, like the woman who they were interviewing, her friend's parents lived in there.
Wow.
And so, like, she was very familiar with that building. And
yeah. And there's a lot of Jews in that building, of course, because you know Jews retired to South Florida heavily, and you know they had issues too because they're like, yo, like you know the Jews bury fast. They're like, yo, like we need to be able to bury our family, but we so they kind of have like you said, makeshift Jewish services like at the site because they're like, well, it's been 5 days, we haven't made it find him or her or them, so we're just going to do like a service here.
I think the recovery right now is maybe about 16 was the last time.
Wow.
So it was 16 recovered. There's still obviously tons more missing.
I think the number was at 150.
It was 150. Yeah. So we're talking about this is going to be an ongoing process. It does beg, you know, initially you think that, you know, this was just a cheaply, poorly made building. And that was kind of the assumption that we were under. Mm. So prior to the most recent spike that we saw in real estate, which was like, you know, obviously the bubble before it burst in the early 2000s, Miami had that surge in that 80s era. They had a huge surge as that cocaine money.
Yeah. Broke.
Right. And as the, you know, so they had a big building surge. And so, yes, was it properly done? I mean, I would have to think that if a building stayed up for at minimum 40 years, it wasn't like shoddy.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like the building was sinking or something, which was contributing. Yes,
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that. Well, I don't necessarily see. That's the interesting part. I don't know that the building was sinking or that the deck in which they had.
There's a certain, so civil engineers and architects and these sorts of things, there's a certain allowance for that you make for a structure to be able to sink over time. That allowance is like 0.025 of an inch per year. This building was sinking like 0.5 or something crazy like that. So over time, that edge of the building had sank like 2.5 inches, which if you think about 2.5 inches times 1,000 tons of concrete on land that's already sort of marshy because it's on the Florida coast, it was bound to kind of crumble in this way at some point.
Yeah, and you know, bringing up the Florida coast, that's the other thing. Like just the sea air and all that stuff just kind of corrodes buildings over time. It just happens because concrete is more like a sponge than people think. It's like if you actually look at concrete through like a heavy magnifying glass, it looks like a sponge. It's not like a solid, like a solid dense thing. So stuff gets into the holes of concrete, the air and the salt and everything, and over time it starts to kind of wear it away.
And you know what? What you're saying makes perfect sense because that is probably why they have to do an inspection every, you know, certain amount of years because they need to make sure that this is structurally sound. I mean. Also, I don't know if there was additions made to this building. A lot of times these things happen.
Probably since 81, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
you add some floors, you add, you know, a new parking garage. Parking garage. We have a couple more apartments here. So, yeah, I mean, it's like really, really sad and really, really unfortunate. It's probably very easy for me to say, but I don't necessarily think this is a cause of concern. I don't think that you're going to see a ton of buildings just collapsing in South Florida is what I'm trying to say.
So well, they actually have a sister building, I think a couple buildings away.
Yeah, and that's apparently fine.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, so it also comes down to like how the building is maintained. Maybe the other sister building was just doing inspections more regularly.
Concrete will erode. I mean, there's just there's no doubt about it. Like, I'm from New York City public housing. That's absolutely concrete. Like after a certain amount of time, like that shit will corrode. It will, you know, there will become issues, and if they're not consistently maintained and done in a way, and this is a part of, you know, owning condos, right? Is that when they have to do these big monster repairs, they don't take that hit. They pass that hit off in your homeowners association dues.
Yeah.
Right? These big sort of major, like, I know somebody who had to get, like, they their condo community had to get, like, their siding done. And they looked up, and they had, like, an extra $30,000 bill. Like, could you imagine? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like what? Yeah.
These are substantial costs. So, you know, look, I'm praying for those families. It's a horrible, horrible way to die, and it's just a horrible way to, you know, see your last days as you're, like, fucking buried under rubble.
Yeah, stuck.
Like,
yeah.
God bless, man.
Awful. One in the show with Sha'Carri Richardson. It came out yesterday, I believe, that that's the evening that she had tested positive for marijuana, and she's not going to be on the Olympic team.
Well, she's not going to be able to compete in the 100 meter, the individual. I don't think they've made a decision on the relay yet.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, and the 100 meter, which was the
big showdown. She's out the 100 meter because that's the qualifying race that she tested positive.
Yeah, for that big showdown with Shelly-Ann Fraser from Jamaica. And, you know, this is a sad story because, you know, she became a rocket ship and everybody was cheering for her and her story's so compelling. But it came out that she kind of knew that she was, like, she
caught. Yeah, you had to know. If you took an edible and then you had to take a fucking drug test, you know.
But I'm saying, but she also had, like, taken the sanction. Like, she knew she wasn't going to compete. So it was kind of like, I'm not quite sure why
the timeline is a little crazy. The
timeline is weird. Yeah, because.
So if we can figure out whenever she was in Oregon, that's allegedly when she took the edible, mm-hmm. which was not an Olympic qualifying meet. She was just at a meet. It was still in her system when she qualified for the Olympics, when we saw the race with the orange hair and all that.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, we don't know if she took it like that day at the Olympics or if she was consistently smoking or what have you. We just know whenever this alleged interview took place, that day when she found out her mother had passed in that horrific way that she found out, that's when she had to kind of take something to cope.
And I calm herself down. And I get it. But so for those who don't know, they're the people who coordinate, the people who are part of or working in association with the IOC who coordinate the list of banned substances. And there are 9 different categories. It goes from beta blockers to blood doping to diuretics to, you know, stimulants to narcotics and cannabinoids, which is what marijuana is under. It's literally called the World Anti-Doping Association, right? So it's like, it's very clear on what their directive is. And it's not a new thing. It's not an unknown thing.
It's not racism.
It's not racism. A matter of fact, somebody was tweeting some stuff today because people are trying to act like this is just about Sha'Carri. And no, it was something like 1 out of every 100 competitors at the 2016 Olympics had served some sort of suspension or had to give up a medal for doping in the past. So it's just that it's not always the kind of new story Sha'Carri's is. It's usually more quiet. And even if you feel like having marijuana /THC on the list is, you know, outdated and doesn't make sense, I mean, it's an international...
It's still on the list.
It's on the list now. And we all know marijuana stays in your system longer than anything else. It's a hard lesson to learn, but like, I think people are also, like you were saying in the beginning, missing the fact that she's not out of the, her suspension is 1 month. She's not out of the Olympics. She's not off the U.S. team. Mm-hmm. She will almost, I'm hearing she's almost certainly going to still be able to compete in the relays. We'll see. She
because the relays are last in the Olympics.
She's just not going to get her individual medal.
Yeah.
And that's sad, but I think what we're seeing from the press perspective and her interviews and stuff is more about her trying to maintain a good public image and good public goodwill because we know she has a star rising. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm just sad as an Olympic fan because I wanted to see her and Shelly-Ann race off, and Shelly-Ann's 34 years old, so this is definitely Shelly-Ann's last Olympics.
Right.
You know, we won't get
this
to see
this is also
that.
Not the end for Sha'Carri. You know what I mean? Like, she's learning a lesson now.
This
she
is a setup
is
for
gonna go on. Like we were saying, it's she has this incredible natural talent. She slowed down a little bit before she crossed the finish line in the 100. So this is not the last that we'll see of her. We just we just want the best for her. We want everybody to be okay.
And I also think that might be the moment that helps Sha'Carri to realize, like,
how real shit is.
We're a world-class athlete now, literally, right?
You can't go to Belenoche no more.
You cannot. The Olympics is the highest level of athletic competition in the world. In the world, Craig. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can't do the shit now that you're pro. And she hasn't been pro that long.
Yeah, that's a year, a little more than a year, maybe.
Not only pro, but you're Olympic level pro. Mm-hmm. Like, your whole life has to change. And you got to start doing that party shit on cycles. Do like Michael Phelps did before he got caught. Like, do that shit.
That's the thing. Phelps never got caught.
But he did get caught. It just wasn't an Olympic year.
Oh, right. Okay. He didn't
But he still got suspended from Team USA for 3 months. They did not pay him, and he lost his Kellogg's endorsement until after the Beijing Olympics. So he's
still in rehab.
Yeah, he still got hit with a penalty. That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to know how to cycle your shit, boo. Like, do all that. You know, do the goddamn patty melts and the hot Cheetos and the grape soda and the weed off season, but when you're training, like, be laser with that shit. That's all I'm saying.
Not
a patty melt.
I wish her well, but she's definitely going to have to understand that even outside of the Olympics, like, a big part of her career, not a big part, 99.5% of her career is going to be international.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
She's going to have to travel. She's going to have to be, listen, man, like, I know we're decriminalizing marijuana and it's becoming less of a big deal in the U.S. That is not the case for a lot of these international places that you're going to be visiting. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like, you're a pro. She probably, you know, barring injury, she can get to Olympics, maybe even three.
Maybe three.
You know, mm-hmm. And so I really wish her well. I would like for her to, you know, I'm talking shit here, as Jeff would say. I would like for her and her team to figure out how they can address, like, when things like this happen, because it just seemed like, you know, she kind of took the sanctions and I mean, and listen, maybe it was for the best. Again, maybe I'm completely talking shit. I know, nigga, I would have been like, nigga, that's wrong. Y'all got the wrong. That
wasn't me, nigga.
I would have went last.
Run that test again.
Run. Be like when you at the store with your car. Run it again.
Yeah, right. I would have been like Lance Armstrong out this motherfucker, man.
You know what I'm saying?
To the last possible second, but God bless her. Maybe she's just meeting it off at the pass, and she recognizes that again because Olympic. This is amateurism, right? Like So yes, her endorsements, like all of that shit matters, right? But when she goes to race and really gets paid and all of that shit, it's really going to be outside of the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how, like, I'm just very curious to see if they're going to find some type of loophole to get her in. I don't think they can because it says it's the IOC and they don't give a
fuck. First of all, let me just, hold on. What we not going to do, we're not going to act like the IOC is some fucking hoity-toity, above reproach, incorruptible.
No, they're totally corrupt.
They're absolutely corruptible. They're absolutely full of shit. Okay,
and last where the hoes at?
Last time I checked, some hookers and some cocaine and a bag of money will get you a far long way. Okay, so yeah. Not gonna pretend like they are a bag of money showing up on a doorstep and saying, "Oh, my bad, we, you know, mislabeled her specimen."
But my thing is, at this point in the news cycle, I don't really think there's any strings that are gonna be pulled. People are, and I guess what I'm saying is, people are acting like, "Well, it's just like you said, it's just marijuana. Marijuana's legal." And whatever. And I'm like, it may have been legal even in the state she was competing in, but we're talking about a different set of rules.
And this idea too, like, we only think of performance enhancements as like steroids. Like, we think traditionally steroids, like shooting some shit in your ass. And that is what we think of performance enhancement. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case. Okay. All of these guys that had gotten caught in baseball, probably only like two of those guys were really like shooting steroids.
Yeah.
The other guys were using all sorts of creams, aids, and pills, and all sorts of things that helped them. And what people also, like, does it make her have super, you know, speed? No.
Yeah.
But it aids in recovery. It helps in, it yeah. helps. It helps
for context, the IOC also outlaws like any drugs that help you with breast milk. They outlaw Sudafed, all of that shit. Anything that's going to help you breathe better.
Yeah.
Tylenol 3, you can't take any of that shit.
Which is why a lot of the sports and a lot of the particularly baseball, you still see that shit happening. I didn't know. Some of that is actually true. They may not have read the ingredients because it's like 25 ingredients on some shit that they bought out of GNC.
Exactly.
Which is why the unions tell them, like, go to your team trainer. Let your team trainer give you the stuff that you need.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up on that note. We'll keep an eye on that. Happy holidays, everybody. Happy 4th of July. Pray for we find some vegan food to eat at the cookout. And
pray for the Wi-Fi at my mama's house, please.
And we will see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.